Can you sing, can you dance, pull a rabbit from your pants, make a rhyme, tell a joke, burp when you drink a Coke?
That's not a talent.
Nope. Jump a hurdle, do a flip, get your dog to do a trick. Top talent.
Top talent.
Play piano, play guitar, hit a ball really far. Are you a superstar? Let's find out who you are. That's the end of this song. It's already too long. Top talent. Everybody.
Top talent. Top talent. This is my podcast. Can't sing this anymore because the words are too fast.
Yeah, better start the show or I'm not going to last. Top talent.
Let's get at it. Top talent.
With me, Rhymin' Richie. Welcome once again to Podcast Land. My name is Richie Phillips, and welcome to Top Talent. I want to get right into this. This is the podcast, by the way, that kind of emanates from the capital region of upstate New York. I try to find talent that's either born in the capital region, somebody who's, you know, moved from the capital region and made it big. Maybe they didn't make it big. Maybe they came back to the capital region. Maybe they don't live in the capital region, but they're coming to the capital region. It's all about talent. And boy, I found one today. Everybody in the capital region of upstate New York knows this man. I happened to work with him years ago, and I've gotten to know him. Great, great guy. Top journalist, TV anchor. One of his writings is going to be a TV movie. We're going to find out about that. His name is John Gray. I don't want to blab on here because I think the podcast kind of tells you everything you need to know. So we're going to get right into it. Get ready for this episode of
Top Talent.
Hello.
Is this John Gray?
It is. How are you?
Well, here we go, and I'm so glad to have this guy on the podcast where tens of people are listening right now. I have a Emmy award winning TV journalist and columnist in upstate New York, and much more to talk about, Mr. John Gray. Hello, John.
Hey, how are you?
Definitely on my end. Definitely real old friend. You know, John, I was going to rattle off, you know, like they would normally do in an interview, all the things you've done, but I decided, because I love to write, you love to write, I love to write.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked at your resume and I thought, you know something? You can actually make a song out of it.
Oh, cool.
Were you expecting anything less?
I love it.
All right. So here we go, John. I'd like to introduce you to a colleague and a pal who graduated with honors from a place called LaSalle. And little known fact, back in the day, he was the redneck reporter on GNA Big John. Yes, sir. He's Big John. 25 years on your TV dial. He's helped underprivileged adults and also juveniles. Emmy Awards. Do you hear? And the newspaper columnist of the year.
Yes.
That's John.
Woohoo!
That's John. 17 more verses, John. And I checked it out. Here's some facts. He's got a wife, three kids, and a dog named Max. He's still on the air. He's a big news leader with Stevie Caparizio and Lydia Hukulbita. He's John. He's John. Hard to rhyme Colbita with anything. He's got some new books out. Ain't that right, John? I found him right away when I went on Amazon. And I've been hunting him down. He's here at last. I finally got the man on my podcast. He's John. A top talent. That's John. Soon to be a major motion picture.
Love it.
Copies available. $25. So... So anyway, it's so much to talk about. I know you only have about a half hour because you got to go to work. I don't have to work, but you do. So let's take it from the beginning. You were born in this area, right?
Yep, born in Troy, the old Leonard Hospital, which is gone. It's up in North Troy. But yeah, we grew up in South Troy.
And you went to high school in Troy?
Yep, I went to Catholic school, St. Joseph's when I was young, and then I went to LaSalle, 7th, 8th grade, then high school. And then because I liked that area of Troy so much, I walked 10 feet to Hudson Valley Community College, which is right next door. And I was there for a couple of years before I went to SUNY Oswego. So the only time I have not lived in the capital region was the 2 years I was away at SUNY Oswego.
Oh, you went to Oswego. I went to Oneonta. I didn't know you went to Oswego.
Yeah.
Okay. So were you in journalism?
Love our SUNY schools.
You in journalism?
Yeah, it was sort of communications, liberal arts at Hudson Valley, because at the time they didn't have a communications, but took all the same courses you would take if you were in communications or journalism. And then when I was transferred, it was communications with a concentration in journalism and broadcasting and that kind of stuff. So I sort of knew what I wanted to do early on, which is rare for kids. I knew I wanted to write. I wasn't sure about the TV stuff until I got to Oswego and really tried it on campus and liked it.
That's what I was wondering, if your big goal back then was actually being on TV or being, you know, broadcasting, or is it the writing part that you loved the most, if you really had your druthers?
I'll tell you a true story. I was when I was at LaSalle, I had a teacher named Lou Rosmelia, who eventually became like mayor of Troy or city manager or something years and years later. But Lou had gone – he was a tough teacher. I think he was a football coach. He went over to Hudson Valley right before I graduated, and then I'm over there, and I'm running the school paper, which sounds impressive, but it was nobody else wanted the job, so I took it. They gave me free tuition if I would do it. I told them no, and then they said free tuition, and we'll buy your books. And I said okay.
Oh my god,
I can run your paper.
Yeah,
it was great. It was a great deal. Lou was sort of an advisor, and he sort of knew of me from LaSalle and knew of me there, and he asked what I was going to do my next school, and I said, I like newspapers. I'll probably be a writer, you know. And he literally called me over one day. He had this book that had salaries. This is like 1982.
Right.
He says, I just want to show you something. He said, average salary for a newspaper reporter, this is a long time ago, you know, it was like, you know, $17,000. Average salary for a TV reporter, $27,000, you know. He said, you know, you'd make a lot more if you just wrote the stuff and then read it on TV versus wrote it and put it in the paper.
Right.
And I was like, why? Well, I had no idea it was that big a difference. So I said, well, I'll try some TV courses when I go to Oswego and see what I think. And I really liked it once I tried it.
But your real training ground, from the way I kind of look at it, was radio, right? I mean, that was your next step.
Yeah. Well, I tied an internship into my college for my last semester, and I interned at Channel 6.
Oh.
And Liz Bishop, God bless Liz Bishop, she was still there. She was there back then, still there now, getting it done and doing a great job. And Ernie Tatro was, I think, the main anchor back then.
Sure.
But I interned at Channel 6, and back then WGY Radio was in the same building.
Right.
On a different floor. And I was talking to TV people, because, you know, you think when you're in college and you're doing your college TV stuff, you like, the minute you walk out of college, there's going to be a line of people who want to hire you, and that's not the way it is.
Right.
And I couldn't, you know, I first got out, I was starting to look around, and nobody, you know, there were no jobs. And Don Decker, who was the news director at Channel 6, said, you know, he pointed his newsroom at Bill Duffy and Ken Screven and all these people and said, you know, all these people started in radio first. He said, think about going to radio. You have to write on deadline. You have to perform it, you know, read it on the air.
Sure.
He said, you're live all the time. He said, TV, you might be live once a day. He said, radio, you might be live like 10 times a morning. He said, it'll knock the nerves out of you if you're nervous. He said, you know, so think about radio as a stepping stone. And you may even love it and stay there, but if you don't, it's great training to get you for TV. If you sound terrible and make a lot of mistakes, nobody knows what you look like.
yeah, it's face
so
radio.
So it really, when I couldn't find anything in TV locally, I could have went around the country somewhere, but I thought, maybe I'll listen to that and try. I love the capital region. I love the local radio stations. I listened to all of them at the time, you know, GNA back then, TRY, PIX 106, GY, all those. So there wasn't really a bad option if I got hired by a radio station. And then I started applying to radio. And even though my college stuff was more TV, it was still writing and reading. So I finally broke in, took me 6 months, but I got hired part-time first, and then eventually was not, I don't want to say good enough. I was not terrible enough that they couldn't put me on the air. You know what I mean?
Well,
when you first start out, everybody sounds terrible on radio. Usually.
I don't know. I disagree with that.
There's probably a few exceptions, but, that who just jump into it and sound great. But I was pretty bad.
No, I disagree with that. Cause that's how I met you. Now hold on a second. I don't want to go any further. Cause I tried to get this person on, and, this person, a blast from your past, said that they weren't feeling too well and it wouldn't sound, you know, the voice wouldn't sound so well. So I didn't push it, but I got a quote. Okay, I'm going to read the quote. You tell me who you think this was.
Okay.
Okay. Really, my only memory of working with John is recording the news in that little phone booth until they moved us to the news studio next to the main studio. We didn't even work together for very long. It was literally like going into a phone booth. Pretty impressive when you think back in the day what stations would invest in their morning shows. Ooh. Dig, dig. The on-air talent, two news anchors. Boy, those are the days. Those days are gone. Who do you think it was?
It's right. One of two people. It's either Darcy Wells or Karen Huxtable.
Ding, 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 ding. Darcy Wells.
Darcy Wells, yeah. I was going to say Darcy. I don't know if Karen ever did the phone booth thing, but I remember Darcy because,
yeah
we literally were, it was like walking into a tiny phone booth. People who were older than 40 remember what a phone booth looks like.
Right.
And standing face to face with the microphone and reading the news together. It was crazy.
I remember both of you. And that's really how I met you because I was doing the mornings with Uncle Fred Horton. That was my original co-host on the show. But I always remember you. And I always thought to myself, this guy never stumbles when he speaks. No matter what it was, I mean, we got early, remember, how early you get up.
Well, it's easier when you're reading, you know, I was usually reading copy. But I learned a long time ago, and I tell young people, if you feel like you're about to lose it, it's the same is true with skiing, probably riding a bike, a lot of things. If you feel yourself like you're about to go off over the handlebars, slow down.
That's right.
And when you slow down a little bit, you give your brain to catch up with your tongue. And if you rush, it's like running down the hill with scissors in your hand. It's not going to end good.
I think I just stumbled on the word stumble. That's how bad I am. Now, actually, somebody else made a comment. His name is John Knott. Do you remember John?
Oh, yeah. He's the one who gave me my first full-time job.
Right, because he when I mentioned that you were on TRY, on GNA, he said, no, he was at WABY before he went even
That's
to
right.
TRY. I lost him to TRY. He was a super talent from the start. So people were writing in when I put this on Facebook, so you're loved.
Oh, that's really nice. Yep. I'll tell you a secret about John, and this is a good lesson for managers out there. I was out of school in the summer of 85 looking for work, and I had, I threw a tape together, and it wasn't very good, and I was sending it everywhere, and John took the time to listen to it and said, listen, you sound like you would when you come out of school. You need more experience before you can work here. Mm. Keep at it. Don't give up. And I got hired part-time at a station called WWCN, which was on all news AM. I think it was only like 1,000. There's a signal. If a truck went by, you couldn't hear the station.
I remember that.
I worked there with Dan Levy, of all people, who's still in TV news. But I got tons of, it's like a baseball player getting trips to the plate. I got tons of shifts where I was reading the news and writing the news. And then like you get up to around Christmas time. I had about 5 months. This is from like June to Christmas. And now, WABY had a job open because those small stations always have somebody leaving. And I called John and he said, listen, he said, we had this conversation in June. You're not right. I said, but John, I said, I've gotten better. I promise you, I'm going to drop a tape. Listen to it. It doesn't sound like I used to sound. And anyone else would have been like, I'm not listening to this guy's tape. It was only 6 months ago, but he did listen. And I'll never forget. I had a job interview in Glens Falls for a station. And the guy was going to make me live up there, even though I was living at home in South Troy. He's like, well, I can't have a news guy, who can't get up here at 3 a.m. when there's snow. And he wasn't going to pay me enough to live up there. That was the other thing. I'm like, I'll try to figure out the math and how I'm going to do this. And I drove down the north way and got home. And I was really despondent because I didn't know what to do. And my mother said, a guy with a radio voice called looking for you. I said, because that's how my mom described those people who got those big, deep voices,
Yeah.
I said, did he say his name? And she said, yeah, not like a knot in a tie. I go, John Knott. She said, yes. And I called him back and John said, I listened to your tape. You didn't lie to me. You have gotten better. He said, I want to bring you in. And then that's how I got my start.
Wow.
So he not only gave him a job, he gave me a chance when he sort of made up his mind earlier, but he took a second look. And every time I hear somebody getting a second chance where somebody looks again, I always think of that.
It's true. You always remember the person who was the inspiration to keep you going.
You're listening to Top Talent, and my top talent guest is John Gray, journalist, and he's also a TV news anchor here in Albany, New York, on News 10 ABC. And now we're going to talk about his career in television. And by the way, Top Talent is brought to you by Nobody. Isn't that refreshing? Top
Talent! Talk about the business now. All right, getting into TV, what is your day like? I can imagine what a morning TV anchor's day is like, getting up at what, like 2 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah, they've got I'll be honest, I couldn't do that shift. I just would be so tired all the time. I couldn't. When I did morning TV in like 90, 91, 92, around there, and but back then the news didn't start till 6 a.m.
Right.
So you could conceivably get up at 4:20, 4:25, jump in the shower, have one cup of coffee, get to work at like, if you didn't live too far, you know, get to work at like 5, and you'd have a full hour to sort of help write some stuff and look through things and get on the air at 6 o'clock. It was just enough time. And you think, okay, and you've done this because you did morning radio. What people work morning shifts. Anyone who doesn't work a morning shift won't understand this, but you constantly backtrack the time.
Oh, so
you
say, my God.
Okay, if I have to get up at 4:20, what time do I have to get to sleep?
Every night.
You go, well, if I'm asleep at 10:20, I'll get 6 hours. That's enough. You know, so that's how you do. That's how you live your whole life, you know. And if somebody says, oh, can you go to the show at Proctor's with me on Wednesday? And you're like, let me think, what time's the show? How long's the show go? They go, well, it gets out about 10 of 11. You go, I can't do it. I got to be asleep by 10:20.
Thank you.
It's really tough. So, if you have that shift, but now it's changed where they're coming in. They're on the air at 4:30. So they've got to be there by 3:30, quarter to four at the latest. So now if you do the math backwards, if you backtrack that to get up to be there at 4 a.m., even when that's late to get in there. But let's say you had to get in at 4, you'd have to get up by maybe 3. So now you got to be asleep by 9 at the latest.
Oh,
you know, and really you should be in the summertime when it's like sunny out, you know, the sun doesn't, it's bright out to like almost 10 of 9.
Yeah, that's right. You can't see. Somebody's mowing the lawn. Right.
Mowing the lawn, motorcycles blasting by, you know, people having parties, and you know, it's tough to like pull the shades down and go to bed at like 8:20 on a Tuesday night.
Yeah, but you still didn't mention the hardest part of it to me is radio is easy compared to TV because like my wife could walk by me in the morning and go, "You didn't sleep last night, did you?" I said, "How'd you know that?"
Right.
She goes, "I can just look at you." And TV, I'm sure there's people constantly looking for visual cues when they watch the news going, boy, that guy's hair is not the greatest today, is it? You know, you have to constantly worry about the visual part.
You're right. And in TV, it helps to keep your hair very short because it's easier to fix quick.
Right.
When you're like due for a haircut and you have a bad, and you don't get enough sleep and you skip a shower and try to just, you know, wet it and put it, it just looks terrible.
You're right.
And you're right. Radio, we were notorious for looking awful on Mondays because what ends up happening, especially in the summer, you know this, if you're in radio, is you get out. You might get out at 9 or 10 a.m. on Friday, so that's great. You've got Friday to have fun, take a nap, go out. Then you can do stuff all day Saturday. Then you go to a picnic or go to Lake George on Sunday, and you're getting to bed at like 11, and you got to get up at like 4.
Right.
And, you know, you just look – you look like you got up, you know, like you've been running since Friday and you got no sleep.
You want to hear something really funny? I know you do school programs too, right? You go and talk with kids. And
oh, yeah, yeah.
You do a lot. Well, just a really quick story because I want to get back to you. But I just remember this one day I went to work and forgot that I even had a school program afterwards because I used to do one where I'd write songs with kids. And I looked like crap. And I went, oh, my God, I forgot I have to go to this school. And it was a preschool, which I never do. So I do the program. I sing the songs with the kids. And at the end, I'm putting my keyboard back in the case. And this little boy comes up to me. He goes, thank you, sir. And I go, oh, you're welcome. I hope you had a good time. He goes, yeah. And he goes, but next time, lose the pants.
What were the pants?
They were the disgusting pants. I had like wrinkled jeans on. You know, he goes, lose the pants. You know, like something his mother would have said to him, right?
Well, they say that, you know, small children in those exercise pants that people, women wear to the gym. You know, those ones that are skin tight. I forget what they call them. Like, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Those things in small children are the two things that don't lie. You know?
Exactly. How do you keep your own politics and your own emotions out of the newscast? There's so much emotional, divisive stuff going on. And how do you stay so objective?
You know what's funny? And there's a trick to this. And you can't – I can tell people, but they have to learn it themselves. You have to start with the fact that nobody's unbiased. Nobody has no opinions on anything. So you have to start by saying, okay, you're not perfect, Mr. Fill-in-the-blank, and you definitely lean this way or that way. So now that we've acknowledged that to yourself, be on the lookout for it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Watch out for it because it can easily sneak into a story where you leave something. You know, the biggest lies you see in media are the lies of omission where they don't put things in.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Bruno, who I got to know a little bit, And whatever your opinion was on Joe Bruno, he did a lot for the area.
Oh, yeah.
And he just died not that long ago. And I remember one day we were talking about this. I was at some dinner, and he was sitting next to me, and he was talking about the media. And he says, what bugs me, John, he said, is like they had done some – he'd gotten all this funding arranged for the airport. And he was very integral in them doing this project. And he was at the – they cut the ribbon on something. This is years ago, you know. And they sort of, you know, you could see that they had a wide shot picture. You could see him there, but he was nowhere mentioned in the article. And he really, and they talked a lot about, they thanked him for arranging the money and different things. And he was really touted at this press conference. But if you read the newspaper article from one of the papers that he was in a beef with, they left him out of the story entirely. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff you have to be on the watch for as a journalist. Even if you don't like somebody, if they do something, you got to like at least do your job and report it, you know, good or bad, you know. And it's not as tough as people think, but you just got to be aware of it and say, you know, and I run into it all the time with producers who put the shows together in news where, you know, I've had some over the years who lean one way or the other.
Right.
And I'm like, you know, and I'll say, look at this, the third story this week you've had either praising Trump or bashing Trump. Like, it's going to start feeling like we're trying to tip the scale one way or the other. So it could be, you know, in the interest of fairness, just, either lay off praising somebody or lay off killing somebody. You know, if it's news, it's news. But you know, it's you really do choose what goes in a newscast as a producer or, you know, a radio anchor or whatever. And they can really sway public opinion if they put their certain things in or leave certain things out.
Oh, obviously, yeah. I mean, so does it anger you when you watch? I'm going to say it like a CNN or, you know, where they're or a Fox where they're leaning, you know, they're leaning one way or another and they do it purposely. Does that anger you as a journalist?
What angers me is when people think it's journalism and it's not, you know.
Right.
It's funny. I wrote a column years ago when CNN started going off from, you know, I grew up with Bernard Shaw, and CNN was really, people who are younger have no idea how good CNN was.
Mm-hmm.
It used to just be the news, and there were none of these talk shows where people were screaming at each other. And it was, you know, they never were going to get a monster number in ratings, but they always had a solid following. You know, they were a solid product. And, you know, MSNBC leans left, Fox leans right. And when they started leaning more to the left, I said, well, guys, what are you doing? Just stay where you are. Stay in that middle lane, and people are going to find you and appreciate that they're not getting Hannity or they're not getting, Rachel Maddow. They're getting something more down the middle.
Right.
But yeah, what bothers me is when people share things without even reading the article based on a headline on social media. They'll just share it, not knowing what's even in there. Or just confuse somebody hacking away on a blog with a journalist who actually has to play by the rules and vet things. And, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of stories I don't run because I can't, you know, substantiate what somebody's telling me, you know, and they get mad at me. They'll send me private messages, you know, tell, oh, you know, that sheriff you had on, well, he's a drunk, you know, and
yeah.
He beats his wife, you know, this kind of stuff. And
sure.
You're like, well, you know, we can't go put that on the air. We have to, you know, we have to have evidence of what you're saying. Now, I'm not saying what you're saying is not true, but knowing it's true and being able to prove it's true are two different things.
That's true. You probably get a lot more calls being that you're local and, you know, you're talking about a local issue, and it's very easy, you know, to either see you someplace and you know, accost you verbally or whatever, because you live right in the community is what I'm saying.
Well, the number one one I get, Rich, is people will be mad. Let's say they buy a car and it doesn't work out and it's a clunker or something. And I'll say, well, you know, there's laws to protect you. There's it. They just want to go. I just want to go on TV and say that car dealership is they're awful and they're cheats. Well, you know, and I'll say, look at, you know, if you've been wronged by somebody, you know, go to the police. If you're wrong, you know, file a complaint, you know, do it. Go through the right channels. Don't just I'm just going to put you on TV to badmouth somebody.
Right. You can't,
especially because you might find out later. Well, they didn't give you the whole truth. I'll tell you a real quick true story. Once when I was a Consumer Reporter, somebody said to me, you know, I bought a couch from ABC Furniture Store. It's a store you'd know the name of. And well, we won't go into it. It doesn't matter. They said, and we get it home, and two of the legs on one side are kind of breaking off. They're not right. We call the store. They offer to come over and put some kind of glue on it. They won't even give us an exchange. And, you know, it's a brand new couch, and it's broken. And I'm like, so I take all the notes, and I said, okay, well, I'll get back in touch with you. I call the store. I get a manager. manager says, knew exactly who it was. He said, the guy who called you was like 20 years old. He said he showed up with his mom, who's like in her 50s, and they didn't want to pay for delivery. It was, you had to pay for delivery. So they showed up with a pickup truck that didn't even fit the whole couch, really. And they said, you know, we'll help you put it in, but you've got to have help on, it was a really heavy couch. You know, you got to have help on the, when you get home, do you have somebody who can help you? Because you two cannot possibly lift this thing down. And the kid's like, yeah, we're fine, we're fine. So they put it in the truck. The kid takes it home. And next thing you know, they're calling saying the legs are broken, you know. And he said he signed. In fact, he signed a thing when he picked it up, said it was in perfect shape. The kid who took it.
Right.
You know, so I call. So now I call the kid back. I go, tell him what I just told you and said, is it possible maybe when your mom and you were taking it out, it hit the ground and you bent those legs? He starts screaming, well, they shouldn't charge for delivery, you know.
Right.
And I'm like. So you lied to me. You guys damaged the couch. He said, You're missing my point. They should have delivered that thing to my house. It's their fault it's broken.
Right.
They don't, you know.
Right.
So I said, you know, we're not doing a story on the couch that you broke yourself, buddy, you know.
Right.
I said, if I were you, I'd have them bring the special glue and just go from there.
Gorilla
but
glue.
Anyway.
That could have been a commercial for Gorilla Glue. You could have gone right into it. I saw.
Go ahead. Go ahead. I was going to say, just to round out your question, there's supposed to be a new boss at CNN now, and I really hope they do get back to doing more news, because I like a station that just does the news, if I can get it.
Yeah, but I signed up for CNN Plus, and look what that got.
Oh, boy.
What a debacle.
I don't know how they so misread the marketplace. And I get it if they spent like $100,000 on it, but they're talking about millions and millions of dollars they spent, you know.
Yeah.
You spend $100 million on something and it folds in 3 weeks. I don't care if it's a Broadway show or a movie or, you know, somebody in the drawing room, in the conference room when you were thinking this up, should have raised their hand and said, I think this is a bad idea.
That's like 700 people getting fired and crazy. I just saw a fact that kind of connects to what we're talking about. This is from Reuters Institute of Journalism. It says, local TV news remains the most trusted ways Americans get their news. When it comes to local politics, coronavirus information, weather forecasts, of course, most Americans tune to local TV, and more Americans tune to local TV than any other news medium. So you got the power.
Well, you know what's funny is, and I'm not going to, it's self-serving for me to say, yeah, you're right, we're great. And that's not what I'm saying. But I was really proud of the Capital Region. I can't speak for every other market, but I'm pretty sure it's probably true of other markets, too. When 2016 came around, and that was such a contested race. Now, this is not when it was just Hillary Trump. This is before that, when they were all still in it.
Right.
A bunch of them came through, including Hillary, Trump, and I forget all the other ones who ran. But about six or seven of them came through. The Capital Region on the way to, you know, trying to get the primary. And I watched how everybody covered it, especially the big ones like Trump and Hillary, and they all got covered exactly the same. You know, from the TU to the record to the TV stations to radio, they just covered it like a news event. So-and-so's in town. We talked to people who were there supporting them. If there were protesters outside, we talked to the protesters across the street and got their take. Why they're protesting, and it was just straight news, you know.
Sure.
It wasn't, you know, angled where you disliked anybody, you know. And that's, you know, I say to people, if you're watching a channel and you feel your blood pressure going up every time you put that channel on, or you just feel crappy about life after you turn it off after an hour, you might want to consider watching something else or or giving it a rest, because you know, so much of the formula of cable news now, and this goes for Fox, CNN, and MSNBC,
is exactly that.
You could turn it on and it's almost like you're saying, how are you today, Mr. Phillips? And you go, I'm actually great, I'm in a great mood. And they're going, well, give us 10 minutes, we're gonna say how everything's wrong in the world, we're gonna change that mood and make you, you know,
sure,
hate your neighbor and want to jump, you know, jump in a river, you know. And it's true. You just sit there going, oh, my God, you know, is there anything positive, guys?
But on the other hand, it is a business. If their lead story was the dog in Cahos that got, you know, got their front paw run over, people would go, oh, they probably would turn the channel and go to something like that, you know?
Yeah, you're probably right.
Unfortunately.
Well, what's really happened a lot, Rich, and you know this, is people live in echo chambers now, where they just go to sources where they're just going to be reinforced what they already believe.
Right,
you
exactly.
Know? And so much of the social media, you know, you go, you know, like a Vanessa Carlton video where she's playing it on the piano, singing a song. you know, and you could listen to three of her songs. Next time you go to YouTube, it's like, hey, have you ever heard of Sarah Bareilles? You know, here's, she's just like Vanessa Carlton. She plays the piano, and it's good in that way. But it's also, if you're watching, you know, negative stuff or stuff that just trashes people, they'll feed you. They'll feed you a constant diet of that too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm hold on a second. Somebody, let's see. Hold and accept. Somebody's calling me. I should be able to conference this. Hello, can you hear me?
I can.
Yeah, I wanted to know, John, if you could identify this mystery voice. Could you please just say something? Maybe disguise it somehow? I don't know.
I don't know really how to disguise it.
Is that enough to know who it is, John?
No. I need more.
Say something else. Where do you know John?
I know him personally.
Mm-hmm. How? Oh, could you have possibly worked in TV or radio with him? Or
I used to. I see him almost every day.
That's my wife. That's Courtney.
Yes, that is Courtney. How are you, Courtney?
You didn't know my voice? How dare you?
Now I know. I knew it before you said that last part. It took me a second to pick up on it.
You're on the couch tonight.
Welcome to Divorce Court. That's my other podcast. Mm-hmm. Right. I know you, Courtney, because I remember you from, you used to work on, not GNA, but our sister station, correct? Oh, no.
I worked on both. I was on before it was Q103.
Correct.
And then I ended up switching over with Mr. Buzz Brindle, and I was the news reporter for the weekends for WGNA.
Oh, that's right. You were news reporter for the weekend. Yeah, it's so foggy to me after being there for, you know, 30 years, but it's just so great to have you both on. And the reason I wanted you on as well is to talk about something I mentioned before in a negative way, dogs, because all the questions I asked on Facebook – to provide some questions that I can ask. And I'm gonna get to both of you. Marsha Mamroche wrote, ask him how he and Courtney got their rescue dog, Keller, who is blind and deaf. How did that work out, guys?
Well, I went to Mohawk Hudson Humane Society for a volunteer thing for a few hours one day. I hadn't been there in years and years and years. In fact, I had to look up where the heck they were again in Manans when I found them. And I just happened to be there the day that, right after Keller had been brought in as a abandoned dog, blind and deaf, and kind of, you know, hurt a little bit, kind of malnourished, underweight, and, you know, a lot of those things. And I basically ran into him there and met him and liked him. And then I kept it under my hat for a few days. And then finally I told Courtney, listen, I met this dog. It's just, I can't stop thinking about him. And she wanted to meet him. And once we both went over to meet Keller, that was it. We wanted him.
So did you become the dog lover because of Courtney or vice versa? Or were you both equally in love with dogs like Steve Caparizzo type of thing?
I've always had a dog in my life usually, but never more than one at a time. And Court, I don't know, you weren't really, you didn't have a lot of dogs growing up, right? It wasn't until later.
No, you know, I really always wanted a dog growing up. And my sister, I have a twin sister. My sister and I would do just about anything to have any type of animal come into our home and live with us. You know, there were times that we would find, you know, kittens on the side of the road. And I was never really a cat fan, but I would always bring them home and say, look what I found on the side of the road. So we have to keep them. And my parents would always say, no, there's no animals in the house. And they would bring them down to the Mohawk Humane Society. I did have one dog that I had from a long time ago that ended up living with my grandmother, but I never really was aware of what type of dog I would ever want or what kind of dog I would like to be around. Now, when I met John, he did have his German Shepherd, Max, and I was very reluctant to be around Max by myself because he was such a big dog, and I didn't know if he would like me or if he would want to be around me. And I created a really special bond with Max because with John working in the evenings, I left news and got a normal, typical Monday through Friday kind of gig. So I would have the opportunity to go over and just be with Max and I. And we developed this really great relationship where I went through a hard time in my life and he was the one that was by my side. Yeah. So in getting to know John a little bit, I really fell in love with German Shepherds.
Nice. Another question related to that. Linda Serbgaitone, I think that's how you pronounce the last name, when talking about your rescue dogs, ask, which one has the biggest attitude? She thinks it's probably a tie between Eli and Bella.
I would say Eli.
Oh, you're going to go with Eli.
Right, it's Eli.
What kind of
Eli? Definitely Eli.
What kind of dog is Eli?
He's an Australian shepherd that's deaf, and he was returned multiple times before we adopted him, and we found out why. He just, you know, we love him to death, but he does have an attitude, and he'll just, he, you know, if you throw the ball and the three dogs chase and he doesn't get it, he'll throw a tantrum. You know, he's pretty smart though. But we love him. He's bold, but we love him.
So wait a minute. How many total dogs are in your house right now?
Five.
You have five dogs. So how do you let, you know, how do you let out a deaf dog? You know, how do you call a deaf dog in, or, you know, a blind dog in? I know our dog is losing his sight.
I'll let Courtney handle this one.
Yeah, how does that work?
You know, it's not the simple fact of calling them in or, you know, having them return to you. They're all one big family. And people, you know, are not aware, I think, because they just see that they're blind and deaf. They don't really understand that they're a family and they go as a unit.
Right.
And it's not training, it's not coaxing, it's not John and I, you know, waving our hands or doing a lot of sign language with them. It's just we kind of allowed them to find their way, their own way. And being in a group of, you know, with shepherds, it's wild to watch these little Aussies, especially Bella, the way that she just gravitates towards the bigger shepherds and sleeping with them and sleeping on top of them and jumping on them. And it's just, I think that John and I have raised our dogs to more or less do the right thing and making sure that they're always watching out for one another. And especially with Keller, you know, Keller, we moved into a new home. There was a challenge when it came to remapping the house, but Keller, you know, walks around and yes, he will bump into things from now and then, but I mean, ideally he's learned the whole house on his own. So he knows where the stairs are.
Sure.
He knows where the deck is. He loves to lay outside by the deck. And, you know, with Bella and Eli, it's easy because I can make eye contact with them should
right.
I need their attention.
Sure.
But when the shepherds run, they run with them. When the shepherds come in, they come in with the shepherds. When they know it's time for bed, you know, I do a thing every night where I go upstairs. Obviously, I go up a lot earlier than John does because he's not home yet. But they all know if I grab saltine crackers, it's time to go upstairs. So one at a time, they'll go up the stairs and they'll wait as the door opens and they get their cracker one at a time. We all go to bed.
Well, this is how we work it with our Pekingese. He gets a cookie if he's bad. He gets a cookie if he's good. He gets a cookie if he goes outside. He gets a cookie when he comes back. Then he gets another cookie to congratulate him for coming back. Then it's like, oh, my God.
So your grocery bill must look like mine because it's yeah. tons and tons of cookies on a weekly basis.
That's right. That's right. And one more thing, Sue Hanrahan, who's another big listener to GNA and really a long-time listener, she said, please thank both of you for all the charity work that you do, and it's just incredible. Now, you must have had these animals on the air, obviously, for everybody to know who they are, right? You had them on with
– It's mostly social media, Facebook page. They've got a, you know, it looks like my following, but they're really following the dogs more than Courtney or I.
Okay.
You know, they want to know what they're up to.
Right.
But they really are good dogs. I mean, like right now I'm on the couch. Keller's asleep next to me. A shepherd's on the floor in front of me. Another one's in a chair across from me. Eli, the troublemaker's asleep in a big Orbis bed. And Bella's in a little crate, which we should get rid of, but we can't because she likes it too much. So they're all – this whole time even on this podcast, they've been – here just being good boys and little girl, and you know, they really are good. They are good pups. You know, our big thing with them, Rich, is you're a family. Get along. Nobody gets to have a bad day and take it out on anybody else. You know
yep.
what I mean? If
yep.
Keller's blind and deaf, sometimes they'll be sleeping on the floor and he's walking. He doesn't know they're there. He'll step right on their face. You know, we're very clear from an early age. They, you know, they dare growl at him. It's like whoa. You know. He's blind and deaf. It wasn't on purpose. You know, it's almost like your parents are with little kids.
Yeah,
you
right.
know what I mean?
It is amazing.
It's like, so, but yeah, they get along great.
And I'm switching yeah. gears a little bit, but I'm not. I want to talk a little bit about your writing, your books and so forth. I did not know you did children's books, including God Needs a Puppy.
Yeah, that was the first one. It sort of happened by accident after we lost the puppy who died. It was a freakish thing. At 6 months old, just passed away. And we'll never know why. It was probably a defective heart that wasn't caught by the vets early on. And not that I'm not blaming the vets. It might not have changed anything anyway. But I wrote this book to help myself and then tried to get it published. Nobody wanted it. So I self-published it and donated the money to charity. And we donated, I don't know, I lost track, Courtney. It was probably 15 or 20,000 from that book. And then we did, they went to animal shelters. And then once I did that, I was able to get a publisher and an agent because I had done so much. It did so well on its own, which self-published books don't sell that many. And then once that happened, that got me a publisher and an agent. And then we wrote a book about Keller called Keller's Heart, and then a third book called Sweet Polly Petals. And then I started writing grown-up books. But so there's three children's books, three adult books.
But the three adult books are doing great, right?
Yeah, so far so good. The second one, not as good as the first one. It came out in the middle of the pandemic, which didn't help because you couldn't do book signings and things. But they're doing well, and we're very hopeful. It looks like the movie's going to be done on the first one. They're working on the script right now. Some people out in L.A., and that'll be a made-for-TV movie. They'll pop up somewhere. You know, hopefully this December, you know, with things that are out of my control, you just kind of smile and say, you know, what happens. But it seems about 100% sure that there's going to be a movie based on the first adult book.
Wow. And that's what, Manchester Christmas?
No, yeah, Manchester Christmas. Yeah.
So that's what it's going to be called.
That should be what it's called. Again, I don't have control over that. They could call it, you know, Santa Loves His Reindeer if they wanted to. But hopefully they, because it's based on a book that did well, and they'll want to call it what the book is. You know, that'll be exciting when that comes out.
I guess so.
I said to Courtney, you know, to sit in a little room in our house, we were in North Greenbush, and sort of make up the story in my head, and then, you know, a few years later to see it on TV, but kind of a surreal, crazy thing.
That I know. This is the thing I saw on Facebook. I said, wow, I got to get you on. So you have no idea who will play any of the parts? Who will play Chase Harrington?
Not yet. That's right, Chase Harrington. They're still haggling over the script right now, whether how close it will be to the book, because it's not one cook making the meal. Once you get to this level now, it's multiple chefs in the kitchen. So, you know, everybody has a different opinion. So I'm not privy to any of it. I'm just on the outside looking in now. However it turns out, I'm sure it'll be great.
Courtney, are you still there?
I am.
Who would you want to play Chase Harrington?
If I had it my way, I would want like a Candace Cameron or, you know, even, you know, and I've never even said this to John, like Felicity Huffman, like somebody that, you know, that kind of represents Chase.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Felicity might be a little old. She's closer to like late 30s, 40. I don't know how old Felicity is, but
I don't know.
Yeah.
She's just pretty. I like her.
But
yeah.
Just...
yeah. Well, yeah. And that's the thing. You never know what a Hollywood director or producer will want to do. They could attach somebody to it who's looking for a Christmas movie, and we go from there.
Well, but who did you say that you wanted? You said that you wanted Jennifer Gardner, right?
Yeah, yeah.
If it ever got to be like a big, big movie.
Yeah, that's who I, you know, it was based a lot, Chase was based a lot on Cordy, but I was like trying to picture actresses, and I was like, yeah, because she got to have the right combination of feisty and pretty and smart and all that stuff, you know, not just somebody who bats her eyes. And the character is somebody who's pretty tough and smart.
So do they basically tell you, they're not going to come out and say you have absolutely no decision making, but did they even hint that if they could change the plot and everything and you would have no say?
Oh yeah. I mean, you can only change it so much, or
right.
It's, you know, be like making Jaws, but it's not going to be a shark. You know what I mean? I mean, then you're not making Jaws anymore. Yeah, but that's the way it works. You know, there's a famous story about Sebastian Younger, who wrote The Perfect Storm, that he sold the rights to the book, and it became a big Hollywood movie, as you know, with George Clooney and Mark Wahlberg, and they hired this big director. And Sebastian, I read this in an article from him, after he sold the rights, he got a lot of money for that, obviously, because it was a big movie, and he contacted the director and finally got a call back. The guy said, can I help you? And he said, you know, I wrote the book. He said, right, can I help you? And he's like, well, if you want to talk to me about the movie, he goes, why would I do that? You know, basically, I bought the rights to the movie. If you want to come to the set one day and meet the actors, we can arrange that. Other than that, we're never going to speak again. It's my movie. So, you know,
yeah.
And that's okay. That's okay. My most important thing, Rich, was, and Courtney knows what I'm about to say, I told them, you know, I don't make a fortune on this anyway, but I said, more important to me than money is that if this movie airs in those opening credits, it says based on the book or novel Manchester Christmas by John Gray. So that to me is worth more than money.
Oh yeah.
See that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? But get what you deserve. Let me be your agent. Don't, you know, I'll get you good money for this thing. Well, I don't want to hold you any longer, 'cause I know you got things to do, But one more thing. This is a very negative way to end the podcast, but are you saddened by the industry, not just TV, but radio and media, the way it's going? And so many local newscasters have left the area, and radio people getting laid off and fired. And I think of how you started, where if it wasn't for radio and your chance to be on the radio, you never probably would have gotten on TV. It's a training ground. Are you sad? Are you saddened by the whole industry?
Yeah, radio especially has been just decimated with satellite and everything else. When I was there, it was starting to go that way, but it was not like, you know, it is now, where you buy a car and they put Sirius in it and give you like a month or two free, so they get you hooked, and then you know, people stop listening to AM and FM radio. You know, and it's funny, when the power was out a week ago for that snowstorm, my first thought was, I got to go to AM radio and find out what's going on with these outages, who's out where, you know what I mean? Because I grew up in a world where that's where you got that information.
That's right.
You know, but yeah, it is sad that radio has become as it's become, where you might get a local morning show and that's about it now, and the rest is just, you know, people who, you know, are not local. They're not going to speak to local issues at all. And that's sad to me. And the TV problem is really a pay problem. They're not paying a lot of money, so people get out of college and they want to be on TV, and they get that job. And, you know, it's exciting to see yourself on TV the first 20, 30, 100 times, but eventually that wears off and you're like, you know, I gotta pay the bills. And if you can get a job in public relations, it pays $20,000 more, people are going to jump. And that's what ends up happening a lot with TV. They just, it's their dream to be on TV. They achieve their dream, but then they want to make more money. And, you know, if you're willing to jump from market to market and uproot your life every 3 years, you can certainly climb that ladder faster, but it's a tough thing to do if you want to have relationships, you know, or a family or any of that stuff, to just keep jumping around the country. Some people do it. A lot of people don't want to do it. And, it's really remarkable how much has happened in our market lately with a lot of the young reporters and anchors. They just, you know, but I also, you know, and for me, it was never about the money. So I know I would have stuck no matter what they paid me, because I really enjoyed doing it.
Yeah,
I've been writing for the record. I've been writing for the record for over 20 years, that column. And between you and I, it's not much money at all. But that's not why I do it. I enjoy writing the columns. That's where the joy is. The money's fun when it shows up, you know, a check, you know, but once in a while. But, you know, that's not why I do it.
And in case you wonder what you stumbled upon, this is the Top Talent Podcast. And my guest, again, is John Gray, who's a journalist and a TV news anchor here in Albany, New York. The station is News 10 ABC. I'm sure you can find it right online. We ended up talking about technology and how it's affected the media and how it's affected employment in the media. So let's continue with the last few minutes of my discussion with John Gray. In TV, they don't even have camera people there anymore, right? Are your cameras just run automatically with somebody with a joystick?
We're automated now. It's robotic, and they push buttons in the back, and the camera goes where it's supposed to go.
Amazing.
Or at least it's supposed to. When it starts spinning around, like, it's crazy, you know what happened. But, you know, but every single movie with robots, they eventually turn on the humans. So I'm waiting one day for the camera to come out.
That's right. Exactly. Well, I don't want to hold you both. And Courtney, thank you for calling in.
Thank you, Richie. I hope you're doing well.
Yes, doing pretty well. And I hope the same for you, and everybody be safe there. And again, John, thank you so much. This is going to go on, hopefully, if my editing skills still exist. There's not much to edit.
Sounds good.
Maybe just edit me out of it. That's all. I just want to edit me out of it.
If Courtney's still there, I'm going to go feed the dogs lunch now.
Yeah.
All right. Sounds good, Bob.
Okay. Thank you to both.
I love you, Court. See you later, Rich.
Okay. Bye-bye. Take care, guys.
There you go. There's John Gray. And by the way, I looked it up here. If you want to get a copy of Manchester Christmas, that's the one that's going to be a TV movie, Chasing Manhattan or Chasing Rome, I will put the links in the show notes for this episode, and you can just click on it and get right to it. And according to this, he donates a generous portion of the book sales to help others and help other causes, which is a great thing. And can't wait to see this movie. It's going to be very exciting. And to keep this podcast alive, can you please subscribe? Please subscribe and leave a comment. I really, really would appreciate it.
The Top Talent Quote.
I'm going to leave you with a great quote. Talent is like electricity. We don't understand electricity, we use it. Maya Angelou said that. Go out and use your talent today. And if you know somebody whose talent you'd like to feature on here, just shoot me an email, richie1077@gmail.com. I will get in touch with them and, you know, make it easy peasy. You can be on my podcast. See you next time on...